last week on what's going on with Earl Ingram. Alzheimer's doesn't just affect a person, it touches the entire family. Diane Beckley Milner from the Alzheimer's Association of Wisconsin joins us to talk about the support, resources, and hope available for those walking this difficult journey. If you or a loved one are facing Alzheimer's, you are not alone. Help is here. Only on What's Going On with Earl Ingram. Follow us at civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcast. And remember to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. You know, I get a chance to do a lot of different things with radio and now with podcasts, and I've had some great opportunities to interview a lot of different people. And I, you know, I'm at the point in my life where I think it's critically important that whenever we appear on these airwaves, that we bring something of substance and something that of value that matters. When you reach 70 years old, you know, you're looking, you know, towards the, I hate to say latter stages of your life, but 3 score and 10 is what has been predicted by the book. And so we're beyond that. And in today's world, you can live a lot longer than what our forefathers used to live. And so with all of the scientific discoveries and all the other things that go along with it, our lives can be not just hanging on, just for hanging on's sake, but you can certainly be very lucid.
Absolutely.
Today, and more so than in my parents' lifetime. So it is with that backdrop that today's discussion is a long-awaited discussion. A young lady who we go back to a time when grade school, and lived in the same neighborhood, same community. I always say to people, if people really only knew what Milwaukee was in the early 60s, the quality of the neighborhood and community that we grew up in, they would be amazed. But without any further ado, I want to introduce you guys to Diane Beckley Milner. She is the Director of Health Equity for Alzheimer's Association. Good morning to you, Diane. How are you?
Good
morning. Wisconsin chapter.
Good morning. I am fine. Thank you for having me here today.
Well, you know, it's been a journey, but we finally got you here.
Absolutely.
And I'm so thrilled that you said yes.
I'm thrilled that you asked me. So thank you for the invitation.
So the Alzheimer's Association, let's talk a little bit about that. What is the Alzheimer's Association?
We are the leading agency in research, support, education of everything having to do with memory loss, pretty much. So we're nationwide. We have worldwide conferences, and we lead the industry in research.
You know, Alzheimer's, when you hear Alzheimer's, it's a debilitating thought. It's almost, you know, like hearing cancer. And so people, when they hear it, they're almost willing to give up. They think that the end is near. How accurate is that assessment?
Well, it is like hearing all those other devastating diseases. And actually, it's even worse. Right now, there are over 7 million Americans that have dementia. And just to give you a few more facts, 1 in 3 older adults die with Alzheimer's or other dementias. Between 2000 and 2022, deaths from heart disease have decreased 2.1%. And you talked about Alzheimer's and how it relates. While at the same time, deaths from Alzheimer's disease has increased by 142%.
The frightening thing about that is there are certainly financial resources that go into heart disease? They have been for a long, long time. Is it reciprocal with Alzheimer's, do you think?
It's getting better. It's getting better. So now that we see how those numbers are increasing, there is more interest. There is more dollars, research dollars that are being added to that. You talked about cancer. Dementia kills more than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. So again, you can see how this all relates. And it's vitally important that we do whatever we can to progress in terms of research. So, you know, we're up on the precipice of our Walk to End Alzheimer's, and that is one of our very large fundraisers that helps us to delve those monies into research.
So many questions as it relates to Alzheimer's. So the first thing I started thinking about is dementia, mm-hmm. because my mother passed. Mm-hmm. She had dementia, and you kind of just watch the downward spiral that she went through, and then you just wonder, is that hereditary, and is that what I have in store? Yeah, I mean, you start when you see those things. That's what's going on in your mind's eye, and so yes. So
and you know, you talk about the mothers. Well, the block that we lived on, there were several mothers that we all, right. you know, experienced that with our mothers. I lived on the same block you did. My mother had dementia. And it can be considered hereditary because you see it so prevalent in families. But I don't know that they necessarily can prove that it's hereditary. But you do see it. It travels in families. Sometimes people have, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 family members that have dementia.
So I know this is probably even higher than your pay grade, this question, but could it be that dementia has been a part of mankind since the beginning, and because nobody discovered it or nobody knew until the time that it happened, that this has always been with us?
You know, again, like you say, it's probably higher than my pay grade,
right.
but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if it has not been around for a very, very long time. And when Dr. Alzheimer's was able to coin it and to capture this idea that there is something going on here, there's amyloid plaque in the brain, there's tangles and plaque that's in the brain, that's when the research, you know, really took hold and said, let's study this, let's see what we can do. There is no cure, but there are ways that we can alleviate some of the symptoms. And that's, you know, what we're dealing with now.
So if you're just joining us, my guest is Ms. Diane Beckley-Milner. She is the Director of Health Equity for Alzheimer's Association, the Wisconsin chapter. Dementia. Mm-hmm. You know, so you hear dementia, you hear Alzheimer's, they seem interchangeable mm-hmm. to the average person. They are.
Yeah.
But you said that they're not.
Well, because dementia is an umbrella term, so dementia covers many different types of memory loss. So Alzheimer's is one of them, and Alzheimer's is the most prevalent. So that's why you hear them interchange so often. But dementia covers several different. There's Lewy body dementia. There's vascular dementia. There's some form of Huntington's dementia. You know, different types of dementia all over, and there's more than 100 types, and probably even more than 1,000 types of dementia that can be identified. But Alzheimer's is the most prevalent, and that's where the research has determined that we can do some things to help alleviate some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's and helping with that.
So the earlier they catch it, listen. So it's inevitable. The outcome is going to be the same in the end, long term, right? I mean, you can't reverse it. But is there any way that you can determine early on the signs that may help you, elongate your life or sure. give you a better quality of life? Things you can do.
There are several.
To mitigate it.
There are several things that you can do. There are some early warning signs. And we call them the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's. And for instance, I'll just go over some of them.
It's forgetting your wife's anniversary. Oh, is that one?
I don't think that's one of them. I think that's just one sign of the doghouse.
Yeah.
That's, that's the only sign that is. Okay. That's the doghouse sign.
Okay.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. I've done
and it's not your wife's anniversary. Well, I think both of you were there.
I you know, Freudian slip. But anyway, go ahead.
So the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's, and I'll just kind of go through these. One is memory loss that disrupts everyday life, you know. So just having things that, you know, if you remember how we used to go home for holidays, and if someone, you go home and you say,
Don't remember who that person is.
Well, not even that. It can be something as simple as, you know, when we were here last time, the house was a little bit tidier. I'm noticing that mom is not able to pick up things like she used to.
Right.
She doesn't keep the house as clean and neat as she used to. So it's those little things that we notice. And we always tell people when you go home for Thanksgiving and Christmas and different things like that, take heed. See what's changed. See what things might be different. Even hygiene. Sometimes hygiene can be a little different with dad, or people don't want to take showers as often. They don't button up their shirt the same way. Different things like that. Another one is challenges in solving problems. So not being able to do your checkbook like you used to. Not being able to pay the bills on time like you used to. Difficulty completing familiar tasks. So just going to the grocery store and not remembering milk, bread, and eggs and different things like that. So it's confusion of time or place. You know, oftentimes now at our age, when we go to the doctor, they will ask us a battery of questions on our annual physical. You know, what time is it and what day is it? And do you remember this and do you remember that? So it's the, you know, or if someone has had a recent stroke, they will ask them, do you remember what year right. this is? Who is the president? Different things like that. Trouble understanding visual images or spatial relationships. That can be one of the warning signs. New problems with words in speaking or writing. Sometimes people with early dementia might say, what is that thingy, the thing that I use for my hair? They may be talking about something as simple as a comb or brush, or that thingy that I use for my teeth, the toothbrush. They may forget those words. So those are signs. Those are signs that we need to see our doctor. It doesn't mean that there's something critical, but it is signs that you might want to take note of and see your doctor and have that as one of the questions that you talk to your doctor
about. You know, with those signs that you're talking about, they're eerily similar to the aging process. So some of those things you're talking about, you know, cleaning a house the way you used to, well, you can certainly clean it a lot better and a lot quicker when you're in your 30s and 40s than when you're in your 70s.
That's true.
These things are so connected, interconnected with the aging process. Are you saying don't take it for granted that it is the aging process? You should get it checked
exactly.
out. You've got nothing to lose by getting it checked
You've
out.
You've got nothing to lose by just making note of it and checking it out with your doctor.
And so what is that process? So I go in and I say, hey, doctor.
Right, exactly.
That's a worry.
That's a little bit of a concern. Or you may go in and say, doctor, I just found my keys. They've been in the freezer for the past 10 months.
Well, that's, yeah, you know, something like that is.
And so, you know, the losing things is one thing. Losing them and not remembering that you lost them, or losing them and not being able to retrace your steps to find them. My godmother, who lived on that same block that we did, drove to the grocery store, took a cab home, and then reported her car stolen because she forgot that she drove it to the grocery store.
Are women more likely to?
There's a higher prevalence in women than men, yes. In Wisconsin alone, we have over 120,000 people living with this disease.
Have they been able to discern why it's different for women than men?
y'all get on our nerves. Oh.
Well. Okay. Well, you stole my thunder. anyway, you know, it really is.
I think that with women, first of all, there's the population. There's more women than men, and also
they live longer.
They live longer, and we are caregivers. So. In the living longer, in having there are more women than men, there it's just going to be a higher prevalence with women than there are with men.
Can it be hereditary?
It can be. It can be hereditary. There have been studies to determine, you know, if you're a child of someone living with Alzheimer's, they can follow you over 10, 15, 20 years to see if you, in fact, develop the disease. So it can be hereditary. It does travel in families.
So what about the nationality of?
There's a higher prevalence among Black Americans, 2 times more likely. Hispanic Americans, 1.5 times more likely. So, yeah, there's a difference with nationalities.
You know, the frightening thing, it does one's economic plight. Stress and those kinds of things, do they come into play at all with this, or is it just separate from all those?
Well, I would say that it would not be separate. I think that all kinds of economic plight come into play because we talk about healthy brain activity. We talk about healthy ways to protect our brain. And sometimes living in a food desert may not be the healthiest thing for our brain. And not having the proper nutrition, not breathing the cleanest air, not having the exposure to, you know, the best things to take care of our brain. So yeah, there economic conditions can definitely play a role.
So what's a if I find that I'm the test, the doctor or can you know check. To find out how are they able, what is the testing process to determine whether or not you have this?
Well, the first test would be to go and see your primary care physician.
Okay.
Now, your primary care physician may do something with just a normal battery of tests, giving you things to remember, having you draw the time on a clock, and so things like that. They may identify that, yeah, I'm seeing a little bit of change here from the last time you did this test a year ago. They may then refer you to a specialist, so maybe a gerontologist or a neurologist, and they may go to the second level of testing. There may be even more testing. The actual final test would be something like a spinal tap,
right,
where they or a CAT scan. So they may do things like that to determine finally that you have the disease. Back when our parents had the disease, they could not test for Alzheimer's unless it was postmortem. So with my mother, they called it dementia, probably Alzheimer's.
So when you look at all the different testing that they can do now in Medicare, this can get to be quite expensive. Is Medicare willing to go the full route with these tests?
Well, recently, again, with some of the advancements that we've made within the Alzheimer's Association in working with CMS, they are willing to go further than they were before. So even now we have 2 drugs that can slow the progression of the disease. And at first, CMS was not willing to pay for the testing or the drug. And now they've, you know, we have what's called AIM, which is a policy arm that has really said, CMS, you need to take a better look at this because there are thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people that need access to the testing, to the drugs that are coming out. And CMS has taken a different stance.
You know, you see it on television many times, breaking news. Earl that you see Earl. He's, you know, he's wearing this and he's wearing that, and
a Silver Alert.
Silver Alert, and a lot of that is that, right? I mean, it's the fact that they're suffering from that.
Exactly. Primarily, that's what's going on. When you see a Silver Alert, it's usually because someone is suffering, has dementia of some type, and they have found themselves walking away from where they were. Oftentimes, people will call me in the middle of the night, and you know what I tell them? Where did they work? Where did they go to school? What neighborhood did they grow up in? So if your brother, for instance, had dementia, we might find him on 4th Street. We might find him in front of Garfield School. We might find him at A.L. Smith, where he used to work, you know. So I tell people, find that. And oftentimes they will find that person on the bus route toward A.L. Smith or things like that, because people go back to what's familiar to them.
That it's because I'm a treatment foster parent. My wife and I were treatment foster parents, and we deal with a young man who has just kind of the same kind of thing. People with dementia require 24-hour care.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so there's not enough housing to house the amounts of people, and especially with baby boomers who, who as we age, this is going to be a critical challenge for this nation, and it better start preparing.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think it's preparing enough. And no matter how you love your loved one, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to watch someone is more than a notion, right?
It truly is. It truly is. And that's one of the soapboxes that I am on in my little corner of the world with the Alzheimer's Association. I am always a proponent for people with dementia and for their caregivers, and primarily for the caregivers, because it is the hardest job that anyone has ever done. And when you talk about how the cost, in 2025, Alzheimer's and other dementia cost the nation $384 billion. They're expecting that by 2050, these costs would rise to nearly $1 trillion. So you're talking about, again, women who are oftentimes the most caregivers coming out of the workplace, having to stay at home to care for an aunt, an uncle, a father, a brother, a mother who has dementia. So it affects the workplace. It affects industry. It affects everything.
You know, I've been married to the same woman for 43 years. And so, you know, we're very young. And now we're, you know, in our 70s. And so in my mind, I'm always thinking, am I going to be taking care of her, or is she going to be taking care of me?
Exactly.
Because the longer you live, this becomes a prophecy.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so, you know, what is society going to do? What kind of assistance are we going to get? And I hear people say, well, we can't afford, we're the wealthiest nation on earth. We can afford whatever it is we want to afford. And as people reach the latter years of their lives, they shouldn't be cast aside. And one of the reasons why I think this conversation we're having is so critically important is as we watch the retirement homes.
Right.
Which we used to call the old folks' home. I never liked it then.
Right.
And the more I look down the road to see me in that, I don't like the old folks' home. But anyway, the retirement places, and the fact that we, our generation, should be organizing and making sure that what's happening in those places are better.
Absolutely.
And it shouldn't wait for us to get there. We should have been doing it all along.
All along.
Right?
And Earl, truthfully, they have. I laugh because you sound just like my husband, who's sitting here in the studio, and he has a complete disdain for anything as far as senior living is concerned.
Right.
But it's something that we, as are the boomers, we have had an impact. I've been in this industry for over 20 years, and part of my career was at Milwaukee County Department on Aging. And our boomers have had an impact on healthy living and making a difference and helping our generation to live better and to take hold and to make the changes in those living facilities. So there's a progression within those facilities. You can go in the facility as an independent person. You can go into assisted living. You can go into nursing home care. You can go in and out of nursing home care as needed. So it's different. There's different trajectories within those facilities now. It's not the old folks home that we knew when we were growing
up. Well, you know, the quality of them are predicated on your financial status. And I get it. I understand that. I mean, my parents spent some time there. And certainly it's a work in progress.
It's a work in
progress. You know, and then we have to be, I just tell you straight up, I at times in my life now, I'm thinking about, I don't want my sons to have to look out for me, right? I'm it's not their responsibility.
Right.
I hear people say, well, you know, our parents raised us when we were kids, and so we have a responsibility. I don't see it through that prism. Sure. I don't want to put that burden on my children.
Sure.
And so I worry sometimes about what that looks like, right? Because in the twinkling of an eye, we're there.
One banana peel.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
We're there. Right. So this whole subject matter that we're talking about has all these different, you know, arteries.
Yes. Absolutely.
That we should be talking about and covering. And it's why I know we can't just do all this in one visit. And I'd love to have you back to talk about some of these other arteries. But when you look at, is it always attributed Alzheimer's and dementia to us being older, or can it happen to people at young ages?
It can definitely. I've known people as young as 40 to have dementia. And, you know, I have a relative that is caring for her mother who's in her 90s that has dementia. She has another child that has Down syndrome, and her Down syndrome child at 40 is developing dementia right now. So it can happen as young as 40, and it doesn't have to happen to somebody with Down syndrome. There's early onset dementia that happens to just people like you and I.
So diet, I hear people say, well, diet. I don't know if diet has any correlation, does it?
It does. Just recently, they've determined that the Mediterranean diet is very good for your brain. And, you know, we've always talked about heart healthy eating. Whatever you do for your heart is also good for your brain.
You sound like my wife. hey, is that meat you have over there?
She has wife speak, as my husband calls it.
Hey. Didn't I tell you about that meat? Oh, okay. Yes, dear. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll just talk about some of the ways that we can love our brain and help us to be a little bit more healthy.
Okay.
One is to exercise. Break a sweat.
Yeah.
That's one very good way to keep those brain muscles moving. Hit the books. Learn something new.
Wait a minute. You said brain muscles. The brain is a muscle?
Yeah. We have to keep it active, just like we do with our extremities, our arms, our legs. Everything has to be exercised. So hit the books, formal education or any kind of education. Learn something new. Learn a new language. Pick up a new habit, you know, a hobby or something like that. Put down the cigarettes. If you're smoking, don't smoke. That my mother, they didn't determine the type of dementia that she had. But I would bet that even if it was Alzheimer's, it might have also been vascular dementia. She lost a limb and her leg was cut off because of smoking. And so if she lost a limb because of smoking, my guess is that she probably also had vascular dementia. But at that time, many, many years ago, more than 20 years ago, it wasn't diagnosed.
So when I hear the term vascular, I'm thinking the heart. I'm thinking, is that the arteries going through? And so that same reality is happening in your brain.
In your brain. The absolutely. Blood.
Okay,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
So following your heart, again, like you just said, we want to be sure that whatever we're doing for heart health is also what we're doing for our brain health. Protecting your brain. Just wearing your helmet if you're riding a bike or a motorcycle or a skateboard or whatever you're doing for that physical activity, make sure you're protecting your brain. Eat healthy and balanced diets. The Mediterranean diet has been proven to be a very good diet for your brain. Getting the proper amount of rest. Getting your 8 hours of sleep if you can. Try to do that. Take good care of your mental health. Avoid depression and anxiety and different things like that. So it's, you know, challenging yourself, you know, doing those word puzzles or those crossword puzzles or Sudoku or different things like that. So challenging your brain. And then socialization, staying in contact with other people, having those date nights with your wife and then maybe even other couples that you get together and play cards or do different things. So having, challenging yourself to stay social.
You know, I can't help but think about people who have not, they've kind of given up on socialization as they've aged and they've kind of gone into a shell. I've seen it. And that can't be good.
It is definitely not.
It cannot be good having constant conversation and dialogue. You know, I don't, look, who am I? I'm just an average talk show host, but you are somebody who is engaged and involved in studying what's going on. And interacting with people has to be something that you need to do almost every day.
Every single day. That's right. Yes. Yeah. It's considered a dimension of wellness. So we have to have that socialization. We have to be in communication with other people. So, and not on Facebook.
So let me ask you, if it's one thing to look out for your own health, but you've got, like me, I had 11 brothers and sisters, right?
Right.
And so as I watch them, you kind of almost have to be concerned about what you see in your in your family, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not
right.
just you.
Sure.
And so if you see signs of that developing in your family, how do you approach them? You know, you don't want to, I think you're forgetting everything. Every time I turn around, that's not the way to do it, is it?
No. You want to have those gentle conversations, but, you know, firm but gentle. And, you know, what is your doctor saying? Do you want me to go with you to the doctor next time? You know, just having those conversations, just being gentle with them and just saying, I've noticed some things. I don't know if you've noticed them. And oftentimes they have. They noticed them long before you did, but they're afraid because they don't want their life to change. They don't know how, you know, does that mean that I'm going to have to give up the keys to the car? Does that mean that I can't go anywhere alone anymore? Does that mean, you know, any number of things? Am I going to have to give up my can of beer every night? What does that mean? So people are afraid, and they're afraid to say anything because they don't know what changes are ahead. But it will be good if you could talk.
So people are frightened, and you're here to say that you shouldn't be frightened. You should really just have this stuff checked out.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Being frightened and is not the answer.
No.
And you don't want to hear what the doctor has to say because it might be bad. There are people who withdraw.
Yes.
Exactly. And that can't be the way to do it.
And especially because now we're in the era of treatment. For the first time in over 40 years, we have drugs that can help slow the progression of the disease, but it has to be administered in the very early stages. So having that diagnosis, having that conversation with your doctor, and then moving ahead to access those drugs can help.
You know, I went to pick up a prescription prior to coming here, and the pharmacist said, "Hey, Mr. Ingram, did you get your latest flu shot?" I wasn't even thinking about a flu shot, right? And in lieu of this ridiculous debate about vaccinations, there are people who have just totally said, no vaccinations for me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I'm not taking these pills. I'm not doing these things. And the tragedy in that is, so I was talking with a friend. I said, "Man, I went to the drugstore today, and I got and the pharmacist said, did you get your flu shot?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, you want it now?" And I'm like, "Why not? Give me the flu shot." And I mentioned it to a friend. He said, "Well, I don't get the flu shot." And I said, "Have you had the COVID shot vaccination?" No, I get that. Have you had the shingles vaccine? No, I haven't. I don't believe in those things. I said, "Man, I had shingles." If you ever had it, you'd wish you had gotten a vaccination. Mm-hmm. And so I believe in vaccinations. I know there are a lot of people who don't. But you've got to do preventative things if you want to hang around here. Exactly. See, I know there are people who think and they can't wait and they talk about the afterlife. I don't know so much about that. Nobody's came back and told me how good it's going to be on the other side. So I got to hold on to what I got now. And so people need to be doing those things. They need to be going in. I go to my doctors. I don't miss my appointments, right? If my toenail is hurting, I run in and tell the doctor my toenail is hurting. If he gives me a pill, I'm going to take the pill for my toenail hurting, right? We've just got to trust. Right. And it's our lives that are at stake, and nobody's going to be more responsible for your life than you, right?
Absolutely. I've always believed that medicine has to be a team sport. It's you and the doctor. You know your body best. You know the questions to ask, and he knows the science behind it. So if together you act as a team to make sure that you have the best quality of life for whatever age you're at, and that's important. And if you have, for instance, if you have diabetes, then you're going to be talking to the doctor and telling them what things are going on, and they're going to make the recommendations. And you can say, "Well, I've tried this, I've tried that, this works, that doesn't work," things like that. And with my mother, who had dementia, I was her advocate. So I was the one that was at the doctor saying, "Okay, we're at this stage, this is what's happening now, what should we do?" And he'd say, "Well, take this pill or take that pill." But I knew her body. So sometimes a certain antibiotic would have a certain effect. "Can we try a different antibiotic, doctor? Because the last time you gave her this one, this is what we experienced. Let's try a different one." "Oh, yeah, I'm glad you told me. Okay, let's try this one."
So it would be nice if everybody was as perceptive as you. I do a podcast with a pharmacist called In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar the Pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it now for a couple of years. And I will tell you that what I've learned from your relationship with your doctors is one thing, but you need to have a relationship with the pharmacist because that's the doctor of medicine.
Without a doubt.
And doctors prescribe medications, but pharmacists know the physiology
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely.
And so I would also add that you need to have that relationship as well.
And I did.
I'm not talking you because you're perceptive. You're on top of it. For those in this listening audience, if you don't have that kind of relationship with the pharmacist, you need to, get one.
Absolutely. And try not to jump from pharmacy to pharmacy.
Absolutely.
Try not to go to three different pharmacies. Find that family pharmacist, the one that you can trust, who knows all of the medications that all of the doctors have prescribed. So they can say, well, while you're taking this, you might want to hold off on this other one, or you might want to slow down, or you know, or did you talk to your doctor and remind him that you're taking this other pill, or that you're getting this shot once a quarter? So just as those kinds of things, you just want to have that relationship. That pharmacist can be a lifesaver.
So as we get ready to wrap this first segment up, what do you want to say to people who are listening, who may be fearful? What do you want to say to ease their minds?
Relax. Talk to your doctor if there are any concerns. They say that some signs of dementia can show up as early as 10 years before the actual diagnosis. So if you're thinking something, if you're feeling something, go and ask the doctor. Ask the doctor if there's any tests that you can take. So be proactive. Don't wait for the doctor to give you a test. Ask the doctor. So if you're drawing that clock, or if you're looking at a clock, sometimes we don't even have a clock in our house.
Right.
We have so many digital ways to tell time. You know, study that clock and see, is this something, am I recognizing where these numbers are? Or draw a clock yourself at home and see if you can draw the numbers in the right place and make 2 o'clock or 2:30. So you can give yourself some tests and then talk to the doctor and say, I'm having some concerns. You know, it's early on, but I'm having some concern. This has happened. That's happened. So be proactive and ask for the doctor to help you to identify.
So the last question I want to ask you is, so I've got doctors, you know, mm-hmm. plural.
Sure.
And I've got a, you know, my main doctor. How, you know, what kind of test is he's? Is he going to be able to connect me to where I need to be connected to deal with this? Because that's not his specialty.
It may not be his specialty, but he will know. If he gives you that baseline test, the simple test, then he can say, okay, based on the results of this test, let's have you talk to the geriatrician.
Right.
Let's have you talk to the neurologist. And they can go on and do more advanced testing.
Yeah, even in that 10 minutes that I get to see my doctor today. But I want to thank you from the depths of my heart. It was certainly well worth the wait. I think that we have a lot to discuss, a lot to talk about in the coming weeks as people right now need to start. We're heading towards the colder weather, which means people can settle down a little more and maybe take more heed to the conversations that we're going to be having. But thank you, okay. Ms. Diane Beckley Milner.
I have two things to say.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
All right. Number one, our walk into Alzheimer's. The first one in Milwaukee is coming up September 14th. That's going to be at the Henry Meyer Festival Ground. There's also going to be one right here in Racine, Kenosha area. And that one is going to be at Panoia Park in Kenosha. So that one is September 27th.
If you'll leave me that information, we'll make sure that we put it on
yes,
our networks.
That would be awesome.
Okay.
That would be awesome. Yes.
Because it clearly is something that that people need to be aware of.
Yes. A lot of information available at those walks.
We'll take that information. We'll especially the one in Milwaukee and the one here, we'll make sure that's done.
Absolutely. And I'd love to come back and talk to you. As I said, caregivers is my soapbox. And November 8th, I have a caregiver conference that I do where we love on our caregivers.
Well, we'll get you back before November 8th. But absolutely, the door is open.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to thank you very much, Ms. Diane Beckley Milner. And until we meet again.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you.